If you have lived more than, oh, say, 7 years, then you've had the experience of having your eyes opened to something that was present all along, which you had not seen before. Not dissimilar, perhaps, to the experience I've heard some of you recount when you've been worshipping for years and years, or reading the scriptures for years and years, and one day, for some reason, a phrase strikes you, or a word, and it kind of gives a new meaning to something that you'd heard for a long time. There's an increasing amount of literature in the fields of behavioral economics and brain research suggesting that such experiences are fundamental to how we actually operate as humans. In a book called Subliminal, How Your Unconscious Mind Rules Your Behavior, Leonard Mlodinow argues that sophisticated new technologies have revolutionized our understanding of the part of the brain that operates below our conscious minds. He calls it the subliminal world, and says that these new technologies have made it possible for the first time in human history for there to be an actual science of the unconscious. At one point in the book, he argues that most of us, rather like the Wizard of Oz, are judged and identified by whatever we present to the world until Toto pulls aside the curtain and reveals whatever's behind it. In that event, it was an ordinary man operating a machine that created the Elijah-like fire and fury. I've had some of these revelatory, life-changing experiences, insights, new ways of looking over the years. Some of you are familiar with the Myers-Briggs type indicator. I remember the first time I worked that personality test, it changed how I was understanding what was going on in things like vestry retreats and what we could accomplish and how I would do something differently. For a number of years, I worked with a group that worked on power differentials, particularly around race, but around other things too. And one day it just sort of came to me so clearly that I sort of went back to boarding school days where I went when I was one of the lucky ones. I went when I was 9 instead of 7. And I remember how every aspect of my life was controlled. And it just suddenly came to me that I don't need to have power over you, but I need to be clear that you don't have power over me in the same way. And that led to a number of things, such as it's really important to me that worship is not a manipulated experience. That while we do what we do faithfully and carefully and the best way we can do it, but it's not about creating an experience. Those experiences of the transcendent, the divine, that do break in and are important, are always gifts of grace and not something that we can manipulate, as seems to me the case in many churches. So these experiences are life-changing in a way. I spend a lot of time working with a man called Ed Friedman using the multi-generational emotional systems theory of Murray Bowen, and the insights from that work are absolutely extraordinary, both about how Jesus was fundamentally non-anxious in an anxious world, and how clarity about who we are and what we're about is so important antidote to anxiety. More recently, I've found the work of René Girard. I know some of you know about René Girard and his disciples like James Allison. Theories of literature and the mechanisms by which we scapegoat others and perpetuate cycles of violence has helped me see and understand what happens at Calvary in a completely new way. In fact, he refers to what happens there as an unveiling of those mechanisms, such that we don't have to keep on perpetuating them, as though the veil of the temple was torn in two and we can now see clearly into the Holy of Holies. So both St. Mark and St. Paul are working through what this unveiling is about with respect to the good news of the one who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Paul almost but not quite blames God for the unbelievers having their eyes veiled, but instead makes a move and says that the cause of the veiling is the God of the world, which is to say when our sight is clouded by our assumptions, our hidden expectations as to what things mean, our passions and desires and so on, that those things can cloud our vision. But then in Mark, it's a voice from the cloud that somehow comes through and proclaims to the disciples there is something different, unique even, about Jesus. Peter and James and John see him elevated certainly by the company he keeps, Moses and Elijah no less. But in the end, it is not so much the law and the prophets, but Jesus, their fulfillment, that matters. This is my son, the Beloved. Listen to Him. We too are invited to see something here. And that something is that what we sought in the Law and the Prophets is now something to be found in relationship with this extraordinary human who somehow walks with absolute integrity and in communion with the source of his being, the source of all life, the same source that is the love that made every single one of us for love. So the disciples began their seeing anew, seeing Jesus in a new light. Jesus, not just one of the prophets. Seeing him up the mountain, but they're not going to see him in full color, as it were, until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Jesus said, don't tell anyone what you've seen until you see it all. It was to be the whole story. His teaching and healing, certainly, but also his growing conflict with the temple authorities that led to Gethsemane and Calvary, leading to his ultimate self-offering there, where the way of life will be unveiled and the power of death and all deathliness urged by the God of this world is overcome. So that seeing is true for us as well, isn't it? Even when we have what theologians used to call aha moments, they're usually part of a much longer process. I like to talk with parents and godparents before a baptism, talking about how in baptism we're marking a turning away from darkness and toward light, turning away from lies toward truth, turning toward what really matters, and that what we do is help each other do that turning so we see anew every single day. We must continue that turning that we see ever more clearly, because we're like the blind man from Mark chapter 8, whom Jesus healed in stages. Do you remember? He opens the man's eyes and he says, behold, I see men as trees walking. He doesn't get it quite clearly at first, and Jesus has to anoint his eyes again until his sight is fully restored. And that's often our story as well, isn't it? The longtime dean of Canterbury Cathedral, who I believe is soon to retire, Robert Willis, early in his tenure at that cathedral, discerned that his vision was that everyone who was touched by the ministry of that church would be able to see Jesus. That they may see Jesus became the mission statement, if you like, of Canterbury Cathedral, the touchstone and watchword of the work of everyone involved in that place. So when you look at Jesus, what do you see? Is it a prophet or a teacher? Or is he more than that? Something distinct from the Law and the Prophets. Christian orthodoxy talks of his being light from light, God from God, very God of very God, begotten, not made. Not only one who points the way, but one who somehow becomes the way. And that's a stumbling block for many of us. That's why it's said that growing in faith is in one respect growing toward the creeds, looking to see ever more clearly the one we aspire to follow. That when the crunch time comes, and it will come to all of us, even only at the time of our death, that when the crunch time comes, we too will walk with integrity, trusting in the love that made us for love, trusting that that relationship is more powerful and important even than death itself, clearly seeing the path prepared for us to walk in. And so in our customary time of silence for prayer, try asking, use it how you will, but try asking that in the days to come, maybe even during the season of Lent soon to begin, that we will have our eyes open to something true about ourselves or about the world that affects deeply the way we think and act. Try asking for that gift of new sight, that through the clouds of this life, maybe we can hear as well as see, hear the voice of God, find Jesus unveiled, that we may see him more clearly than before. This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him. In silence and in response to the gospel, let us pray.